Today, it's Edwin's Monday Evening Property Rant. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, where the latest posts covering finance and property news. It's Monday again, and Edwin is back for another rant. Edwin, you can't make this stuff up. Wherever you look, it's getting more and more stupid. We've got power prices going up. We've got people in the political circles dodging the superannuation tax. We've, of course, got the floods in northern New South Wales, and you know, many thousands of people isolated, and a lot of houses being written off. And yet, it feels to me as though the politicians are less and less connected from reality.
Well, it's emotions running high, part two, Martin. And the old saying goes, "It's not over till the fat lady sings," or is it the fat politicians till they sing, or yeah, it's not over till it's over, right? So, and you can't make them lay straight in bed. You can't make them, give it to you straight when questions are asked of them directly. So the question is going to be, what extra taxes are we going to be paying moving forward, and how much are the current taxes that we're paying? More to the point, land taxes that we're paying, yeah, similar to Victoria, where they doubled in areas where, for investment properties, they absolutely went through the roof, and investors are jumping out left, right, and centre, from your residential to your commercial and industrial investors, jumping out. I mean, is it going to happen in New South Wales and in other states? So where is it all going to go? But as I said, it's not over till it's over, or till the fat politicians sing. And the unfortunate thing, folks, is the system isn't broken yet to reset and start again.
Well, it is very interesting what's going on. So this is actually a coverage of the unrealized tax gains question, right? Which, of course, Labor has taken through the election and shaping it around the superannuation sector initially. But as this particular post shows, the unrealized gains tax has been carefully designed by Treasury so that it can be extended to all investment assets and maybe one day to the family home. And that's the point. That's why I've been railing about this for so long, because, of course, everybody says initially, well, you know, it's 3 million on superannuation, so it's a very small proportion of the population. But that 3 million is not actually indexed to inflation. So over time, more and more people will get caught inside that particular trap. But it's the principle of taxing not the income when you sell or buy assets, but valuing the assets on an ongoing basis. And if they go up, then you are incurring a tax liability that you have to pay, even if you don't have cash flow to pay for that tax. That's the problem that I've got with this, and it's absolutely disgraceful. And I'm quite interested in the number of people who've come out and said it doesn't make any sense, including recent past politicians and other people too. But you know, set that against this, the PM to get delay on super tax. So Prime Minister Albanese and other veteran public officials eligible for defined benefit pensions will be able to defer payments of the new superannuation tax on high-value retirement savings until they retire. So it's one rule for them, and it's one rule for everybody else. I mean, I find this absolutely disgraceful, but I'm afraid it goes to form. We see it again and again and again. The politicians are fundamentally thinking about themselves and protecting their own little world that they live in, and not actually thinking about real Australians and what's going on. And the more I look at this, the more I just think they really have lost the plot. And yet, of course, Labor's come back with this massive, massive, vote, quote unquote. And the Liberals, of course, face a very grim reality, even just to win back seats that they've lost, if they can work out how to get back together as a coalition. So we actually have a question in my mind about whether we have real parliamentary systems in Australia, or do we have something else? And I just shake my head thinking, this is absolutely nuts. Ordinary people are being led up the garden path on a lot of these things, but politicians just look after their own.
Oh, of course they do, Martin. And look, yeah, we've got countries that will put you in prison for simply thinking, right? And will put you away and will fine you for thinking about things. I mean, the world is just getting crazier. So if you take that premise on board, and if you take what's been put at play right now. Yeah, let's move forward 5 years. Let's move forward 10 years or 15 years. The question is going to be, Martin, when are we going to get taxed on future income earners, right? So, hold on, you know, don't turn the video off, Martin. Don't turn it off. Look, this is unrealized gains, right? So if you follow that thread, knowing politicians, you follow it along, and we're going to get to, you know, it's a matter of not if, but when are we going to get to the principal place of residence, right? Then you got to have the next one to that is going to be the premise of unrealized gains on the money that your children are going to earn when they're born. And go out into and start earning a living, right? I mean, but why stop there, Martin? Let's go a step further. So if you dream about winning the lottery, or if you start thinking about winning the lottery, and you know, sometimes you sort of daydream as you think, you know, especially when Powerball's at around 150 million, and you sort of say to yourself, shit, what could I do with 150 million? When that thought hits your mind, the taxman's going to tap you on the shoulder and say to you, hey my man, yeah, if we're going to tax you, you can turn around and you can say, hey, hold on a minute, but winnings are not taxable. Say, hey, we don't care. The politicians say we're going to tax you. So
you
we're going to get
about
there.
It. Yeah, absolutely. It's the Minority Report, Edwin. You do remember the old 100%. Minority Report film where even the thought was a crime, right? Even a thought will be taxed. And look, the fact of the matter is it's really important that people understand why we've got to this particular state of play. And I think Christopher Joy's article recently just highlighting the high public spending, which secured, quote, a soft landing, you know. But when you actually stop and think about it, this is really quite fascinating, because when you actually ask, well, so what is the share of the government debt? It's now got up to 28% of GDP, right? So the Australian government sector as a share of the economy is now an aggressive 28%, and you can see how it's risen over recent times. So more and more and more of what we are seeing is taxpayer funded. And, you know, if you want a sharp relief on that, to Edwin, this is the Victorian story, right? So net debt in Victoria is projected to grow. It's 167.6 billion now, 194 billion in a few years' time, right? Massive, massive rise. So the problem we've actually got, and the problem the government has got, is that the bill is very expensive, because so much of Australia is now in the public sector. So much of it, directly or indirectly, is actually being driven, frankly, by what debt in the public sector is doing. And what that means is they need more money. Now, of course, what they should be doing is dealing with the fact that a lot of energy companies, for example, aren't paying tax at the moment. A lot of mining companies aren't paying tax at the moment, et cetera, et cetera. But no, they don't go after corporates. They go after ordinary Australians and their tax bills. And so they're looking for every little way to try and leverage out a little bit more tax here, there and everywhere. And just to make it even worse, let me highlight this. The bond markets, of course, particularly long-term bond rates, are going through the roof. And that's partly because of what Trump is doing, and partly what's happening with the Eurozone and everything else. But the fact of the matter is that the cost of debt is much higher than it was, which means that the proportion of taxpayer take supporting the debt continues to rise and rise. And in fact, their latest numbers suggest it's going to continue to rise. So they're desperate to try and find other ways to grab more money in. And of course, they go for the easy, low-hanging fruit. And by the way, these unrealized tax gains, there's a few other countries that have already taken it down this route. So they're sort of following the global think space when it comes to some of those things. But it doesn't make it right. And the principle of moving away from taxing profit to taxing unrealized gains is a huge shift. And by the way, the other point, if you look at the way that unrealized gains and losses work, even if you were to make a loss subsequent, you don't get it back from the tax people. What they do is they allow you to park it against future rises. So, even if you get a loss one year, you don't get the money back. So for me, this is a huge, huge issue of principle. And we're going to find a lot of people who are going to be receiving tax bills if this all comes in, which they simply can't pay, which means they have to sell the asset in the first place to try and actually pay the tax man. This is disgraceful.
But the thing also with that, Martin, is the fact that in order to put the new system at play, you've got to start new committees, you've got to start new job descriptions, you've got to start new departments. You've got to start basically having a valuation company within the government itself. I mean, the valuer generals really—they're going to look at it and say, "Oh shit, they're really coming back." The valuation reports on the valuer generals office in relation to the value of land, typically sits anywhere between 12% and 15% below the real value of what you get on the sale of a property. So they're gonna change a lot of that system. In order to do that, as I said, you've got to start new think tanks, you've got to start new government departments. And this is why we've become over-governed and overburdened with the public sector because of all these think tanks and all these committees and all these departments that really don't do anything other than just look at ways that they can tax the people that want to go ahead and earn a crust. So, and what we're going to find moving forward, the unfortunate thing is that more and more people, which is really moving closer and closer to the country that we're married to, that the current government is married to, which is China, where basically over 40, you'll no longer be employable. Over there, over 35, you get put in the scrap heap. You become an Uber Eats driver with multiple degrees if you lose your job. So we're heading down that path. But again, I mean, this is my conspiracy theory hat on, right? It's all about forcing the older generation to sell, but it's no longer a conspiracy because that's what they're trying to do in your face. And you've got these commentators talking about it anyway, and these reports coming out ad hoc from different institutions. The best way is to really push them out into retirement homes, push them out, send them overseas. I mean, do all sorts of things to the boomers that so-called own all of Australia. It's all this, their way of dealing with the problem, but not really looking at what's right in front of their eyes that's creating the problem. So initially, I mean, we're basically seeing what's going to happen across Australia, but what they're doing over in Victoria, rolling out more revenue raising schemes. In New South Wales, the fines have almost doubled, if not, in some cases tripled in price recently. Can't remember the politician that put that out, a local member from the Parramatta or around that area, Holroyd Council, I think it was, put that out. But we've got more and more ways that they want to squeeze us. With all sorts of issues. Oh, this is to help to control the road fatalities and to do this and to do that. Well, there's a lot more things that they could do in order to prevent and lower the road tolls, the in relation to accidents and everything else. So, I mean, you've got insurance issues. You've got a lot of people that basically going around with bald tires, unserviced vehicles, uninsured vehicles, because they simply can't afford it. And as we were talking earlier on, now you've got this, which is another tax, where the energy bills are just gone up again, about to go up again in New South Wales, predominantly New South Wales, Queensland, and South Australia. I mean, we're just getting hit. We're just getting hit left, right, and center, with the floods, the recent floods, and there's more to come, and there's more natural disasters, such as your when we head into summer. If it ends up being a really dry and windy summer, potentially we're going to end up with a lot of fires in the regions, in the areas where the councils have really haven't kept up with the maintenance of the national parks. And yet for the last 10, 15 years, we've been paying a motta for that, but nothing's been done. Why? Because most of the money again goes back to the think tanks, the committees, the groups, the this and the that's, to discuss about the three-legged cockroaches that live in the lower mountains region, that and how that affects if we get rid of those, how that affects the five-legged frogs in the mid-mountains regions and all this sort of shit that goes on. So, and the bureaucracy is just gets worse and worse. And we just have to fork out more and more to the point where it's not farcical because, as I said, there are countries, there are places where you can get locked up for thinking good thoughts. And when I say thinking good thoughts, I would say praying or meditating outside an abortion clinic or the like. You can get locked up. And people are being locked up. Say the wrong thing, think about the wrong thing. The thought police. Who'd have thought? Who'd have thought that's going to be the next national anthem for mainly your part of the world, Martin?
Well, yeah.
That's going to be the new anthem. But hey, I can't remember who put that song out, but it was we're here. We're here and moving forward, as I said in tongue in cheek, what else are they gonna tax us on that's unrealized? I mean, it's just one of those. It just wait. It's almost like you could almost set a new show on TikTok or on TV or on whatever social media platform people are on, right? It could go viral. The what's the next tax? And ask those sort of questions, and whoever gets it wins $100,000. But as soon as they win the $100,000, they get taxed 99% of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and of course, the obvious ones are water and air, right? Because those things you absolutely need. And well, we'll start metering how much you use. Well, are you doing that on water? What about metering the amount of air you breathe, right? So they'll send you a bill at the end of each month for
the flush tax. There's the flush tax, Martin. There's the flush tax. How many times do you flush your toilet? That you got. I'm just following your thread.
Yeah,
just
absolutely.
On your line of thinking there, Martin. So yeah, the water, toilets, or following the thread. How many showers? But and they'll measure it. That will put some sort of measuring device down your sewer lines and your and I mean it's just endless, right? It's just hey, we're making a lot of money. Most of the working people of Australia must be making a motto in order to hand this over to the politicians that retire on a. On golden handshakes, and I'm sure. Look, I'm sure they're gonna all gonna get together with the the 49th vice president of the US over a cup of tea and scones and discuss the future of Australia as he was successful for her as well. No, we won't go down that path.
No, I was going to don't go there, but I will just make one point, Edwin. It was interesting that surrounding these latest power price increases, one of the suggestions is that the electricity companies should have greater control of the solar panels on people's roofs to be able to actually intervene. So this is another example again where effectively people are looking for the wrong answers for the wrong solutions. But coming back to the floods, I just want to highlight this. Chris Mims was quoted as saying, "Nobody will be left behind." Right? It's a long, hard road to clean up. Flooded towns begin their massive rebuild. But actually, look at this. The first thing that people are talking about, well, milk prices are going to rise. We got 30,000 remaining cut off on Sunday. About 50,000 people were isolated. I mean, this is very, very significant. And of course, we're getting the same warnings as normal. The mayor of one of New South Wales' most flood-prone towns has warned that the current disaster can make it ever harder for people to insure their homes. Now, we've been talking about this previously, but up in the Mid-North Coast and in the Hunter, I've already seen insurance premiums go literally through the roof, or in some cases, they are uninsurable. And Mims said he would have to see the damage with his own eyes to understand what was really going on. And the Insurance Council of Australia said there were claims already in the affected areas. I think around 3,000 claims so far is what I looked at to see. So, again, what we've got is a bit of smoke and mirror stuff going on here between what's really going on and what actually people think is going on. I've had a number of conversations in the last 2 or 3 years from people who were looking to buy up in those areas. And, when I do my one-to-one conversations, I always roll out the flood maps and show just how flood prone the whole area is. And one of my advice points has always been, go and get an insurance quote so that you can understand whether in fact a particular property is insurable or not, because there are some that are not. And interestingly, in some cases, you can insure for everything but flood, which doesn't make a lot of sense, frankly, given where we are. So, like it or not, we've got the ticking time bomb here of all these factors coming home. And, we touched on the higher electricity prices, et cetera, et cetera. This is going to put more pressure on people. I just want to highlight the old chart, the one I come back to, the house prices versus capacity to pay. It's worth just reflecting that the median home price continues to rise whilst the capacity to pay doesn't. And some of that, of course, is to do with the other costs that people have to see, not least power prices, as we've discussed. And interestingly, Canstar put this out just to show the amount that prices were like to rise across New South Wales, Queensland, and South Australia. So the pressures on households are there. I see it in my surveys, of course, all the time as well. And, more and more and more piling on the pressure. But when you actually look at what people are saying, what they're right about is the rate cuts. Rate cuts and election vows to push house prices higher. Over the next 2 years, HSBC is tipping prices in Sydney and Melbourne to lift by, say, 12% by the end of 2026, thanks to strong demand and lack of supply, et cetera, et cetera. Others have a different view. CoreLogic's come out saying rate cut will support housing markets, but don't expect a boom in house prices until affordability improves. And affordability, of course, is absolutely shot, as I showed in that other chart. So it is interesting to see. But we've got this massive pincer movement on people, where you've got the jaws of ever higher costs across the board, higher tax take, et cetera, and higher prices. And I don't know how you square that circle. So it's not surprising there to see that the auction clearance rates boost up a little bit after the cut, of course, last week. And we've got reactions were interestingly varied. So Michael Blibey wrote that last week's interest rate cut had a patchy effect on auction results as buyers weighed on the prospect of lower borrowing costs against the tide of global and economic uncertainty and came up with different answers in each city. So that's quite interesting. And I think that's probably right. The other interesting observation, whether you saw this, Edwin, but people saw probably a whole bunch of Finder articles covered in the various areas about whether it's cheaper to rent or to buy. And depending on where you are and which suburb you're looking in, is it cheaper to rent or buy in South Australia? Well, it depends. Rent or buy, it depends. It depends on where you look. You know, fascinating to see this coming through. The truth is that my analysis says it does very much depend, even in locations, even in specific locations. It's not that simple as to whether to rent or whether to buy, because if you rent, you've got to take account of things like strata fees, which are going up. If you buy, you've got to take account of all the costs of the property, et cetera, et cetera. Oh, and I thought this was quite interesting just to sort of round that conversation out. If you want a balcony, it's going to cost you. So they're looking at balconies in Sydney equivalent to an extra $400,000 if you want to go buy a place, an apartment with a balcony, pay more. But maybe the real answer is you should maybe buy parking, because you can now buy a parking lot for $600,000 in the centre of Sydney. So this article was suggesting that maybe that's the answer. Forget property, just buy parking and go sell the parking spaces. So, I mean, we're all over the place. So my point is, Edwin, stupidity rules supreme at the moment, right? And all of the shenanigans with regard to the election, interest rate cuts and everything else is spilling through into house price expectations. But people need to understand just what's really going on the ground.
And it goes back to, and we go back to the understanding the markets and the markets within the markets in the Sydney, in the Sydney region. Look, if you want to, I could go out and buy, quite a large number of apartments for clients if they want to live in the inner west, below two bedroom apartments with a balcony in the west for less than $700,000. And they can hit me up. But this is the big but you got to be prepared to pay $4,600 per quarter in strata levies.
Yep.
So there's your answer to a lot of these helicopter view analysis or reports. You may break it down into cities, but then you start looking at regions. Yeah, the auction clearance rates have been tracking higher across the board, across the region, Sydney region, according to Domain. But then you look at a specific area in not necessarily even in a granular point, but let's look at the eastern suburbs. Across the eastern suburbs, you had 24 auctions on the weekend, and the 24 auctions one of the officers that we work with were tracking around the eastern suburbs, mainly Bondi, Coogee, Bronte, Maroubra, those areas around there. And you've got 24 out of which four or five sold. The rest were passed in or withdrawn from market or went into a private treaty campaign. And so there's your granular look at areas. So not everything that, from a helicopter perspective, it looks good. But when you start looking and breaking things down, I've got no doubt, and you and I have been talking, I think we were the first to really start discussing and really drilling into the difference between apartment lifestyle, apartment cost and values as to freestanding homes, and we've been doing it for over 5 years, 6 years, when the mainstream were basically melting everything into the one pot, and we're basically pressing that. That story, that narrative, to an extent they still do in order to sell the stories. But look, in essence, Martin, what we're looking at is we're looking at regulatory changes across the board, across the main states now, that are going to have huge effects, and it's going to be, there's going to be a lot of shifting sands. We've got natural disasters again that's going to shift the landscape, and it's going to shift the focus of where people buy, what they buy. We're looking for a property for a client in the outer regions of the Sydney region, in the west and southwest regions of Sydney region. And yes, we obviously have to look at the flood zone map overlays and be more very very detailed as to what flooded, what didn't. And as much as real estate agents, selling agents tell us, oh, this property didn't flood, and such and such a flood, it was clear, it was dry as a bone. Yeah, but you were surrounded by water, and you couldn't move out of the house for 2 weeks. And these are the things that people need to take stock of. What's going to happen with the shifting of your now with the shifting of the sentiment with small business and cottage industry in the cottage industry in the southwest region is I said to these clients, I said, let's hold back on the purchase, and let's just hold keep the powder dry till we know, have more or less of an idea. And as we were getting closer to the election, and we had the feeling that the Labor government were going to come back in, well, that was, and as soon as that was sort of being voiced, being felt, being talked about in the mainstream media, we started seeing the listing numbers in the southwest region for the type of properties that we're looking for our client. They just that they doubled, quadrupled in numbers. And it became a smorgasbord. So where properties started at 1.6, now you could make offer. They're still on the market, by the way. And now they're down to asking prices of your 1.4s, 1.3s, and dropping because there are more around. But you look at what these properties are, and these properties are small cottage industries where basically the businesses are just being taxed left, right, and center. And this is the effect. So where did these people go? Where are they going to go? Everybody's going to gravitate closer to the city centers. And if you're used to living in acreage, if you're used to living in half acre lots, you're going to find it very difficult to live in an apartment. And especially if you're going to be carting with you a young family, and with that is accompanied with your furry friends that come with you, and every other pet, your pet rock, and whatever else you have as a pet. So your apartments are not going to cut the mustard. And this is what I keep on saying. Yes, we are going to see values in many parts of Sydney, in the western region, where it was unheard of for homes to crack the $1 million mark. It was unheard of for homes to crack the $2 million mark. And as of last week, you got Seven Hills just cracked the 2 million, and Kings Langley is not far behind. So you've got these changes of groups of properties or types of properties that people are going to be fighting over, because once again, we're really not building as much or as many, or in areas where they're not flood prone, they're not flood affected. You've got your Jordan Springs, you've got your Box Hills, you've got your areas even closer to your Badgerys Creek airport. You've got your areas down there where they just lifted the soil levels by 100, 200 millimeters and satisfied the council requirements to go from 1 in 50 flood areas to 1 in 100 to allow to subdivide the land. And this is what you've got. And you pile on the current other current government policies onto that, and it's just a melting pot, which leads us to the inevitable that you and I have been talking again for also for a number of years, unfortunately, and that is what I put up on X, and it's basically so it begins. Let's and I said in the post, let's keep an eye on this. Martin, as we mentioned last week's Monday evening property rant, the property effect, with regards to the rental market, with regards to what's going to happen with the legislation, and the what people are looking for, that security, that long tenure in a in a principal place of residence or a rental. The deterioration and the decay of society is the aftermath of what we're going through, and it's going to get worse.
Yeah, and I think I just put up two tweets, the one earlier, which I'll come back to, and this one, which really highlights the issue we're talking about here, that there are people who are finding it very difficult at the moment. There are people being forcibly booted out, as this little vivid thing shows, which is part of the problem. And then, as you said in your other one, if you look at the issue of the fact that all of this is destroying families and futures, I mean, it is madness. I sometimes wonder whether we have a government, a state and federal level, who really understand what it's like on the ground. And I have to say that it seems to me that they're more and more disconnected now from the reality of people. I make my shows every month on mortgage stress. And it's interesting that I have quite a few people who say, yeah, this is really, really tough. And yet somehow the politicians are saying, no, we're helping you. It's fine. Everything's going to be fine. Wages growth is now growing. Everything is absolutely fine. And yet when you look closely, I actually made a show on this the other day, Edwin. When you look at closely or what's really going on with rates of income growth, the story is very different from what you might have expected. And in fact, this show was Reality versus the Statisticians. Yes, we do have a real income recession. Because, like it or not, despite what the ABS may be reporting and the way that some of this data is being spun, a lot of people are hugely under pressure at the moment. And where does it actually end up? It ends up with more people homeless, more people struggling to find somewhere to live, or more people having to commit more and more of their income to just cover the cost of somewhere to live, with all of the consequences and implications of that. And I see that through the rentals and also through the mortgage payments. So this whole thing is going absolutely pear-shaped. And yet, as you say, there are still areas where prices are continuing to go higher and probably will go higher still, because interest rates will probably come down a bit more. And the banks, of course, are very keen to lend more and more and more. And therefore, some people will be able to leverage up even more. But it's not good for the economy. It's not good for society. And at the end of the day, we're destroying Australia in the process.
And then we bring in ad hoc policy, and look, not all of it, not all of it's bad, as I said, and as I've got great passion and a big heart for the rental community, and I try to do a lot of work and try to assist in many ways and put out a lot of information over the years, even before we started doing the Monday evening rants and talking online with yourself, and even before that, and when I was running the property management book, and I even got I even did a couple of articles on the issues around renters with pets, and I did a koi. It was meant to be a humorous side of tenants that had pets and the struggles that they were going through. This is over, gee, I think it was about 12 or 13 years ago, around that time, and where I even said that it was in jest. I said that I prefer to have tenants with pets than I do to have tenants with little kids. The kids do more damage to the properties than the pets. But anyway, look, that was tongue in cheek. And as I was saying, like, my heart really goes out to the tenants. So a lot of these new tenancy regulations that have come in, that's also going to change the landscape, as we spoke last week on the Monday evening property rant, and that's going to affect a lot of the regional areas, your South Coast regions and your North Coast coastal regions. But the thing now is, Martin, the thing now is whether or not the authorities, the policing entities, the policing bodies are going to prosecute landlords and agents to the full extent in order to show that they mean business. Because if they don't, all we're going to get is what happened to these two, 70-year-old ladies, ex-nurses that got booted out of their residency that they've been there for over 7 years, and all because of the new policies, the new tenancy regulations that got brought in last Monday around the 90-day, the ending tenancy under the no grounds. But if they don't, if we see this property come back on the rental market in a month or 2 months, I'm just saying, I'm going to keep an eye on it for sure. Because if they don't start prosecuting, because this isn't the only one. I mean, I know a lot of property management teams around Sydney, and there's a lot that haven't caught the attention of the news, of the shenanigans that go on, and will continue to go on for a while, and all because of they're looking at non-wasted Sunday to circumvent through the regulations and look for the loopholes. But if the governing entities bodies are not going to shine the light and not going to prosecute, well, all we've got is just another dead duck on our hand, and we've just got policy that means nothing. Unlike the underquoting regulations and changes and this and that and further education and this and that we still see where I keep on tagging Fair Trade in New South Wales on my X post and bringing to light shit that for whatever reason they don't seem to see. But I mean, it's another toothless tiger where you've got an individual's office that is making $7 million gross revenue in income, and the majority of the sales through that office is sold by way of auction, and as by way of misleading and deceptive bait advertising, and yet what does he get? He gets a $22,000 fine. What's 22,000 into $7 million? That the made in gross revenue over a 12-month period.
Well, absolutely. Well, the problem, of course, we've got is that there's a lot of regulation that's been created, but nobody polices it. Nobody actually enforces it. We've mentioned underquoting. We've mentioned, all of those sorts of issues as well. So is this going to be any different? Be interesting to see. But I would tell you that in Melbourne, where, of course, the legislation has been further down the track, some investors are starting to take it quite seriously and are actually making sell investment decisions. Another reason why Melbourne is not a great place to buy property, which takes us quite nicely into actually some of the numbers. We might look at the Sydney numbers first because I have them loaded. So in Sydney, on the 19th, there were 20,524 properties listed for sale. And if we go forward to the 26th of May, 20,523. So pretty much.
I'm not told.
Hey! And looking at our tracking numbers, you can see here that we're finding that listings are still higher than last year and are continuing, interestingly, to go a little higher.
Yeah, and it's bucking the trend. It really is bucking the trend. How long is this going to go on for? It's going to be a year to be saying, and by how much are those numbers going to continue to rise? And the type of property is obviously it's very pertinent for our followers, because we've seen a lot more land parcels come on because the Sydney region, according to Domain, also capture the land envelopes as well.
Yeah, good point. And if we look at the story in Melbourne, you can see here on the 19th, 28,155 properties, with houses leading the way with more than 15,000. And if we jump forward to the 26th, 27,988. So a very small easing. But again, it's mostly houses, some apartments, some townhouses, some land packages. And interestingly, Edwin, this week I've had a couple of one-to-one conversations with people who are actually in Greater Melbourne and are looking desperately to get out. And the reason they're trying to do that is because they just think the whole Melbourne story has gone pear-shaped. Now, we've been talking about this for a year plus, actually. In fact, we quoted some of the WeChat chatters who were talking about this last year. Well, I can tell you that on the ground, there are people desperate now to get out and are prepared to cut their asking price significantly just to get out and go buy somewhere else. So I think we're going to see quite a lot of that. And interestingly, I'm seeing in my one-to-ones now, it's not just investment properties, but it's people who actually have an owner-occupied property in Melbourne and are now looking to try and move either up to Queensland or to Perth or even to Sydney, but anywhere but Victoria, anywhere but the centre of Melbourne. I think that's really interesting. And, you know, we're going to see that continuing, I think, to play out. Now, if you compare that with the Brisbane story, of course, Brisbane, smaller market, 3,791 on the 19th, 3,682 a week later. And maybe no surprise given what we see there. But again, there is still quite a lot of demand. And interestingly, some of that demand's from interstate. And then just on the auctions, well, the auction rates, you know, looking a bit more promising over the next week or two. So is this a sign of a change, Edwin? What do you think?
Yeah, is it a sign that we're going to see moving forward now that the, you know, the rate cuts have, are at play, now that the election cycle settled, people know. Look, it was always going to be a case of whether or not we're going to get a government that was fully vested in tenancies, or a government that's going to be fully vested in bringing in landlords. But both of them equate to higher prices in many central regions. So is this a change? Is the confidence starting to boost? Because the majority of auctions happen in your eastern suburbs and your northern regions, and is it a change for the better? But on a granular level, those changes aren't evident, which we're going to look at a little bit further down the chart. But let's see. Let's see what it all means. But in terms of one thing for sure, one of the stories that hasn't changed is anything that's appears to be well renovated. I'm talking about appearances. Looks well renovated and looks polished. Gets sold, and people fight over it. And anything that's not presented well, in some people may say that requires a bit of renovating, that seems to be lagging behind. And it's if there's any changes to the construction costs and renovation costs moving forward, that may be snapped up fairly quickly, those properties, or they may linger on, like we've seen in a lot of areas where homes that require a greater extent of renovation lag behind. And you can, in my view, that's my personal view, they make a bit, it's a better proposition, but you've got to have the appetite to renovate, of course.
Absolutely. Well, I think we're going to see that play out. And again, people are trying to find ways around this. The trouble with renovations, of course, is that the cost of those renovations are continuing to be very difficult. The cost of materials are still quite high, although they've come back a little bit in terms of inflation. It's still at a very high level. But the labour costs are huge. And now we're going to find all that construction reconstruction up in northern New South Wales, that's going to put even more demand on the construction sector. And we'll be finding people will be going up there and being able to work on insurance jobs and charge full mozza. So that's going to put pressure on the construction sector in other parts of the country. And so if you've got a builder, hold on to that builder. And if you're thinking of trying to employ a builder for renovation work, you know, be go careful, go quick, because the chances are that there are going to be even less people actually available to do work. Now, just on the clearances, this slide, of course, that we produce each week now shows that really not a lot has changed from last week, right?
No, look, in terms of the clearance rates, yeah, a lot of people are banging on about being higher than last year. I look at more at the medium home, the following figures that we're charting, the Sydney, Melbourne Median Home and Apartment Value Tracker. That is interesting post election. What that's doing, and let's not forget, there are two groups that are now looking and have been. One is the WeChat charterers that are all in and and basically got a mortgage broker on Corp to buy premium property in premium locations. Is their mandate across the five WeChat groups that Dusty and Evan belong to in the in WeChat Chatter, in the local WeChat Chatter groups? They're looking at premium property in premium locations. They're not concerned about the yield, because they're more they just want to as far as they're concerned, retail holdings, retail, commercial. Mainly around the retail, hospitality, commercial units are just because small businesses are just going to be falling left, right, and center. So that's one group of people that we got to be mindful of and watch carefully, because they will bolster the medium home value tracker, and your other group is of course your self-managed super fund retirees, where it'll be I'm not saying it won't happen, but it'll be a lot harder to put values on capital growth of homes than on other asset classes such as your gold, your cryptos, your bitcoins, your stocks and whatever, because that can be tracked on a day-to-day basis. But it's very difficult to not difficult, but it'll be a lot costlier to track values of homes, and how often do you do it as well. So your higher value markets obviously don't track up in value as quickly as your markets in the western suburbs.
No, good point. And I think it'll be interesting to see how it all plays out. Certainly a lot of uncertainty amongst many people as to what to do, and the government intervention at so many points not necessarily helping. But it is interesting, I think, to look more granularly, and in fact you've put some interesting analysis together here, looking perhaps at how the helicopter view changes when you actually go into some specific market areas.
Yeah, so if you look at the Sydney Melbourne Median Home and Apartment Value Tracker that we use there, if you look at the Sydney apartments in general terms, that's crept up over the last two 3 weeks, and you would think that's the orange line there. In general terms, people are getting beating their chests. I mean, I'm having conversations with agents all around Sydney, a lot of them are beating their chest and saying all sorts of things about what the market's doing. But I won't share the actual location, but this is an actual sales and growth chart for a specific area. This is from one of the websites that we subscribe to, that we get these charts. And if you look at the trend from the beginning of 2025, the end of 2024, to current times, the apartment values are actually dipping. And this was one of the conversations I was having with one of the with not only one but two local agents today, as I was looking for an apartment for for a client in this area. And this is a very very sought after. Yeah, sought after area, very affluent area. And if you look at the tracker from a more granular point of view, as opposed to the general trend, the suburb it has been tracking downward in the apartment values, and this is what we're chasing. And as much as the irony is, Martin, the irony is that in terms of the average values there that you see, that the chart shows, when I speak with the selling agents, they really can't help themselves. They they're saying, oh yeah, but don't worry about the guide. Don't worry about the guide. That's what we put there, as you know. That's what we put there in order to attract a lot of buyers. But because because you're an agent, we can talk openly, candidly. Yeah, my vendor wants an extra $200,000-$300,000. But then I said to them, then I send them screenshots of recent sales where the low val the low values that they've been guiding, expecting higher prices have just basically hit them between the eyes, and they've created a rod for themselves, and in actual in essence have done a dis an injustice or to the client, the vendor, because at the end of the day they put pressure on the vendor to let it go. And and I said to them, look, this is you're telling me you're going to get $300,000, above the guide that although I'm trying to negotiate with you on reasonable terms on the day, but if he comes, but if we come to the actual day of the auction, we're not even going to come close to what we're offering right now before the auction. I mean, that's just the strategy that we take. So what I'm trying to get at is the it's important to note, and this is where I say to people like that want to know more about an area, more about a more of a granular look. Is to do the those one-on-ones with yourself, to give them a very very street by street look at values. It's what we see in the media, and in general, I mean we're sharing in general terms with some of our information as well, but we try to be a little bit more specific. And but our viewers and followers understand that. And we're talking more about the trends and the people that influence the trends and the way that values may move straight away or long term, or to be watchful for different events that that the mainstream aren't picking up. But yeah, that's I thought that was very had to be shared today. Because although the tracker is showing an upward momentum for property, there are some suburbs that aren't are going the opposite way.
Yeah, well, I always say, you say too, you must go granular and you must separate apartments from houses. And in fact, with even in that, you need to look at different types of apartments, the high rise versus not, because a lot of them are going in different directions at any one time. And these aggregate data points that everybody keeps quoting really can be highly deceptive and misleading. And yet they're actually used quite often by the agents to bolster their own position. And of course, it's always to try and get a bigger number. So we'll see how that plays out. Edwin, we should look at the rentals before we sign off the show. And it's interesting that in the Sydney rentals market on the 12th, we had 11,099. On the 19th, 11,234. And in Melbourne, 11,454 compared with 11,595. So we're seeing a slight rise in the rental listings. And that's to do, I think, with the time of year more than anything else, particularly where we are through the winter season. And interestingly, there are a few areas where rentals do seem to be a little bit easing back, but it's not uniformly spread. And in fact, if you look at some of the recent reports, for example, there was one or two that was suggesting that well, maybe it's great to see the fall of rents. Now, my view is that if you look carefully, a lot of those falls in rents are up at the upper end, particularly houses. And Belleville Hill in Sydney is one which I was looking at quite interestingly, and their rents have dropped about 5%. But if you look at the more contested markets in the inner west or apartments, it's a very different story. So again, these rental aggregate numbers don't necessarily tell us the full story either. And I think that's really important for people to understand that you can quote these aggregate numbers, but when you look in detail, it's quite different. This is actually the Belleville Hill rental. Interesting. It was the slowest in the city, according to this report. And interestingly, they're saying there are people from overseas and there are people with families interested in the particular properties, but the rental, $2,350. I mean, that's not your average weekly rent, is it? And that's clearly well above the typical rent. So again, it's really important to go granular and to understand that the story of the markets are not one market, but multiple markets. And that's true whether you're in the rental sector, it's true whether you're in the purchasing sector, because these aggregate indices really are, well, I think they're deceptive and actually can be quite dangerous.
You've hit the nail on the head, man. This is where people have got to differentiate, and this is where it's getting for buyers and for those that are looking for rentals. It seems to be getting harder and harder. As much as the regulations and the legislation would say otherwise and tell you otherwise, there's six ways to Sunday that agents, selling agents and property managers are finding ways not to disclose pertinent facts. And to circumvent, things that could get them, regulations that could get them in a lot of hot water, but they find it. And look, it comes from the halls of the REIs anyway. So, yeah, it's and
It's
you're
systemic,
not
isn't
going to
it? It's
curve
systemic.
exactly, and you're not going to curve the way they think in the CEOs, the board members. I mean, they own the bloody franchises for crying out loud. So anyway, yeah, if you can't, you got to take a if the government wants to be serious about it, they want to take a stick to the from the REIA all the way to the state institutes and let's start from there, but they won't.
Unfortunately not. Before we go, your tip of the week.
Well, we've discussed this for a number of years. We actually spoke about this well before things started evolving, and unfortunately, again, here we are. The chickens are coming home to roost with what we're seeing happening across parts of Sydney and mainly Melbourne. But the tip is, it's sad what's happening. It really, really is sad. It saddens me to see us go, turning into a nation known, that's going to be known for its crime, rather than for the many other great values and assets that we have and we had. But look, the tip is going back to what we shared years and years ago. We started sharing years and years ago as to saying that economic factors and the strains on the economy and the way of life and sustainability was going to lead us to this point, and that is, where violence is going to spread and violence is going to surge. So our tip, my tip once again, reflecting on many years ago that we first shared that was, is, don't walk alone. Don't walk alone. Whether it be daylight or evening or night, just don't walk alone, and especially in shopping centers. Do not be distracted by your phones. Do not be distracted by your window shopping, and it's predominantly with phones because you just never know where it's going to come from. And it's becoming more and more dangerous. As I said, I'm not picking on Melbourne because Sydney seems to be going that way. A lot of it doesn't hit the news, but from what agents in the many parts of Sydney that we talk to, they're seeing a lot of crime escalate, and that petty crime that leads, potentially leads to serious injury and beyond. It's a sad state that we're in, Martin. It really, really is a sad state. But yeah, don't walk alone. Make it a point, especially if you're going into shopping centres.
That's a very good observation. And the fact, one of the things I'd highlight there is that the way that people use their phones and the fact they're quite often very exposed, those phones are very much candy for those people who are interested in trying to make a quick buck. And you might be grab your phone and run and, potentially can access the data on the phone. So a couple of points there. Keep your phone relatively secure. Make sure it's got a password on it. And also make sure that it's backed up and you've got the ability to track it and also disable it. A lot of people don't do that. And that can actually save you a lot of grief subsequent. The problem is, we are living in a much, much more uncertain society. There are a lot of desperate people out there, and unfortunately, some of those people will, do things that sound pretty disgusting and upsetting and quite risky, but they'll do it. And therefore, you need to take some accountability, responsibility yourself, and just watch where you go, watch how you traverse, and as I say, keep your phone safe.
That's right, man. And yeah, look, my heart goes out for for the youth, because a lot of them are getting dragged into this unnecessarily. But it's a lot of the blame can be put on our politicians. But yeah, outside of that, we can't change that. All we can do is just be warned and be alert.
Absolutely, Evan. Well, thank you very much for another interesting show. We've covered some very important ground again tonight, as we always do. And I'll look forward to doing that all again next week, because we'll have yet more shenanigans to talk about by then, won't we?
Oh, definitely. That's the certainties of certainties of life. Death, taxes, and political shenanigans.
Absolutely. So the property ramp will always have something fresh to say. Thank you, Edwin. Take care. Have a good week. See you next time. Cheers.
All the best. Ciao.